You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. We are broadcasting live this hour with recap and analysis of the kickoff of the South Dakota State Legislative Session. Let's round out our hour now with expert analysis from our Dakota political junkies. John Hunter is publisher emeritus of the Madison Daily Leader. He is a member of the South Dakota Newspaper Hall of Fame. Michael Card is professor emeritus of political science at the University of South Dakota in Vermilion. And they are both seated here at the Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. John Hunter, welcome back.
Thanks, Lori.
Thanks for driving in. Same thing, Mike Card.
I'm glad to be here.
I appreciate it. All right, let's go back to Governor Larry Roden's State of the State address and talk about some key takeaways. What were you keyed into to kick us off with? Mike, why don't you start?
Well, I think the first thing that you mentioned earlier in the hour was Tony Van Huysen's call for civility, noting that we have 105 citizen legislators, and they each have constituencies, and they each have their own wishes and desires, and then Jackie Hendry noted that for them, what was it? She spoke with the Senate Majority Leader, who noted that these may be wildcats as opposed to just legislators that need herding. And I think that's the place to start here. And there's a variety of things within the governor's speech, and I think that's probably time to talk with them about those, especially under that guise of we need some civility. As you noted in yesterday's In the Moment program, we have a lot of conflict, and we have social media which is raising the conflict. And whenever we get upset, we sort of lose our minds.
John Hunter, what did that moment with, especially with Lieutenant Governor Van Huysen, before they even introduced the governor, giving probably a minute or so over to why we're here and civility?
I think Governor Roden is demonstrating more civility than his predecessor. And when I say demonstrating, I think it's, we've talked in the past of how do you define civility, but what I think he's meeting people, he's open, he says, you know where to find me. He's, I think, giving much more respect to the legislative branch than some other governors have. And saying, look, let's wait together. He talked about his property tax proposal. He said, look, this doesn't have to be the only one. I'm open to others. Let's discuss this. You know, we talked at the budget address. He said, here's some money if you guys want to work with this. And right. I just think he's demonstrating the kind of things that we'd look for in a civil kind of conversation. But that's no guarantee. There's a lot of people in peer. 105 legislators, department heads, cabinet people, governor.
And issues that people are passionate about.
Yes.
And it's an election year. So what are we listening for as the year goes on about who are the people, Mike Card, from a political science lens, you can send out to say the tougher thing, and who are the people that have, what does civility sound like when you're also in the rough and tumble primary season? Pre-primary season.
Well, we are in the pre-primary season, so I think we'll be on the lookout for what bills get sent to committee in the House. Mm-hmm. The Speaker of the House, John Hanson, is one of the candidates for governor, and the Speaker of the House determines which committee bills are assigned to and works with the majority and minority leaders as to which members of the House of Representatives sit on those committees. And we know that even last year there was a little bit of confusion, I'll say, maybe that's the nice word, about why certain bills were sent to certain committees. This isn't new. This has always been the case that the Speaker and the President pro tem of the Senate will send bills to committees to deal with them as they see appropriate based on their conversations with the governor, with their caucus and the like. Yeah. So I think that's one of the first things we'll look for. Will taxation bills go to the taxation committee? Just as one example.
All right. What else stood out for you, John Hunter? What's another big area? We talked a little bit about civility and this idea of convening and getting together and talking things out in South Dakota. And then you noticed what that the governor said.
Well, I was struck by, we've been talking about property tax relief, or a lot of politicians have been talking about it. And so he made a proposal, which I think was interesting, and it's not a poorly thought out proposal, but it is swapping one tax for another. So it is neither.
It's simple.
It is
understandable.
Simple. Yeah, I think so. So in addition,
fits on a bumper sticker.
So I think that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. There's, you know, it's not perfect, and again, it's swapping one tax for another. So I guess the good news is that it wouldn't involve huge cuts to school budgets, which some other property tax proposals have said. It's a fairly small shift, but I don't mind small shifts. And same with the homeowner thing that was passed last session. That's just a step in the right direction. So there's no reason, if you do think your state is in good shape, why not to don't make proposals that throw the fabric completely into disarray.
Seth Tupper said on our the most recent Junkies conversation he was a part of that a lot of people forgot about that property tax legislation last year. I had forgotten about it until he said it, and now Governor Roden is reminding us, this is what I did last year, this is what I'm doing this year, you're welcome to be part of the conversation. Yeah. It's fairly well played.
And I think it's very well played, and that's part of the civility is he mm-hmm. kept noting that I'm up for a conversation. Let's talk about it and not hammering down, this is what I want to have happen, and if you aren't with me, then I'll take care of your bills in file 13 and the like. And he's not saying anything like that.
Yeah. Operation Prairie Thunder, John, also delivered some numbers, which I have not checked into, so I'm really curious to hear your thoughts on what he said in the state address about Operation Prairie Thunder, acknowledging Brookings as being a flashpoint for their operations, but then also what kind of questions you have as a journalist when you look into what is the real impact of this operation.
That's perfect, Lori. The question is, that, you know, he listed a certain number of arrests, drug arrests, DUIs, revoked licenses, and so forth. But the question is, would any of those have happened if they didn't have Operation Prairie Thunder? Mm-hmm. So is that an incremental number? It's just once you named this operation, these are all the things that have happened since then. So I think in large part, if it's all increment, in other words, if we've caught people who were driving under the influence who wouldn't have been caught otherwise, that's a good thing. And so is that worth the resources? Most citizens would say yes to do that. So I think, but it fits into the overall picture, I think, of this strong law enforcement, strong, crackdown on crime and so forth. So as a journalist, I would dig deeper and see, you know, what really happened, where, you know, is this, and I'd talk to the local folks to say, what do you see here? And if you're the police chief in Brookings, or if you are in other cities, maybe even the newspapers or whoever covers news in Brookings, and see what citizens are saying.
When we look, Dr. Card, at what's happening in Minnesota, and we look at Operation Prairie Thunder numbers and how it can appear, you know, the political divides, the polarizations that we were talking about, what are some of the questions that you want to know about how this program is being executed in the state, especially when it comes to what South Dakotans feel about their strong support of law enforcement, but also a strong desire to be free from overreach of the government and to care about your neighbors.
And as well, to how do we keep our business community operating, because we have some problems, as was evidenced by a forum here in Sioux Falls, that we are having trouble finding agricultural workers. Mm-hmm. Our birth rates are relatively low relative to what we need for people like me who are retired and no longer in the working force. But milking cows is hard work. Sorting vegetables is hard work. A lot of the work is hard, and you can't make your margins necessarily by paying market level wages. So I think there's a lot of things that go into the South Dakota view of what immigration reform or trying to remove individuals who may be here unlawfully, at the same time that the federal government is dismantling the refugee system, is dismantling immigration judges, that they are, ICE is arresting people who are showing up to their regularly scheduled meeting with an immigration officer. It seems as though at one level we're shooting ourselves in the foot, and at the other level, there are people who have broken the law by being here unlawfully.
So my question is, we're watching the politics play out in a rather dramatic way,
yeah.
But is the policy progressing?
Well,
I think that's a good question.
Yeah, it is a great.
I would like to know more about the comprehensive immigration policy and how it is changing beyond the battle over specific operations in specific towns in South Dakota.
I think the biggest part of that, Lori, is that if you have policy or laws and they are there shouldn't be a question whether they are enforced or unenforced. And we have had that in America for a long time. They'll say, yeah, these are the immigration laws, but we don't pay attention to them. And so there's a – and it's a millions of people kind of dichotomy that's part of that. And so the question is, do you bring the laws to where you are in reality, or do you try to enforce the laws that are on the books? And all I can think of is that this focus on immigration laws could lead us to find place in the middle. I don't think it will under the current presidential administration. That's not kind of a place where they meet in the middle. But I'd love to see whatever the compromise is as far as immigration, come up with that, and then we'll say, okay, we all agree on this, and now we can mm-hmm. execute those laws. Right now, the law and practice are just so far apart. I don't know what you do.
And the politics come into this because Minnesota is not even in the top 10 states percentage-wise of immigrants who are here without legal status relative to the population. Those happen to be mostly Republican states.
Politics and policy. Anything that you didn't hear in the speech that you would like to hear more of? Anything? Otherwise, we need to move on. You mentioned population decline, and we just have to talk about our chaste women because there is this this quotation, and it's a beautiful quotation in its full context of Peter Norbrook saying, I believe in South Dakota, in the fertility of her soil, the warmth of her sunshine, and the nurturing tenderness of her winter snows. I love nurturing tenderness of her. That might be. I don't know if I always think snow is nurturing and tender.
And we're pretty sure he's been in a blizzard or two.
I believe in the simple beauty of her rolling prairies and the more pretentious splendor of her western hills. I believe in her government and in her institutions of home and church and school. I believe in the sturdy, intelligent manhood of her sons and the chaste womanhood of her daughters. Why include that quotation? Because, you know.
You can think of it a lot of ways, one of which is he provided the full paragraph of the concluding sentence.
Yes. There's more. We could go on. There's more to the quote.
There is. Mm-hmm. And that's one explanation for why that was included. It may have been another explanation that we're not looking forward, we're looking backward. We're trying to look to make South Dakota great again, as opposed to make South Dakota great in a different way than it was before, because the world is different than it was before. Hmm. And for some of us, that's a good thing. For others of us, the challenges that we face. You know, I think of the quote that Kathleen Norris put in her book, Dakota, A Spiritual Geography, when she asked a friend what she thought the ideal future would look like, and her friend said, it'd be like we were in the 1950s again. Now, that was 1980 when that book was published, but that's a notion that many of us don't like change. Mm-hmm. We don't want any change. And there are others of us that are quite hopeful about the future, as well as want to recognize the past, that some good things happened, some things that weren't so good. But we seem to be wanting to whitewash the bad things that happened in the past and yet still hold those up as an ideal to aspire to.
Yeah. John?
I think it's nostalgia. I think that's what they're trying to paint. And again, the 1950s. But remember, that speech by Norbeck was 1919. And so I spent a little mm-hmm. time thinking about what South Dakota was like in 1919. And, you know, kind of a brand new state, right, within a generation or two of its founding. And, proud of the schools and churches and institutions. They started from whole cloth. There's a lot of that that, maybe got carried away a little bit with kind of that's been men were men and women were women or whatever.
Well, the children were above average.
Right. But I think it's – and it, so, yeah, it's a little bit of that. You know, things weren't perfect in 1919. We had the Spanish flu and we had other such problems. But
And I think Larry, farm problems.
Yeah, well, and Larry, yeah, too, from being a rancher in western South Dakota, has seen the beauty of the rolling prairies and the – and the hills and the sunsets and all that kind of stuff. So I think it appeals a little bit to him too. So I think it's just a nostalgic moment, at least a little bit. And yes, I think as Mike said, maybe looking back, let's do it the way we used to. And that is a, you know, I don't think you can go back to four farm families on every section and the yellow school bus going down the street and picking up all the children. So it's a different world. And I think we do, but I think, you know, to end on in the nostalgic note, and maybe it's inspiring to some people. And you know, we believe in South Dakota. I love South Dakota, and I appreciate the passion toward the state.
And there is a line about solving the perplexing problems of the future, as they have of those in the past. So let's talk about the future a little bit in our remaining time here. What are some of the things about the future and about his opportunity agenda that you think he is pushing at this point? There's a real conversation to be had about economic development and what that looks like in South Dakota right now as some of these ideals and ideas clash with each other. What are you looking for, John?
Well, I think, yeah, economic development, I think, has been the heart of South Dakota's agenda for 40 years or more, is that let's move from where we are to get better. And I think almost everyone agrees the state should play a role in that, whether it's recruiting businesses or helping with housing or childcare or whatever those kinds of things are. So I do appreciate the idea of his open for opportunity, and most of the things that Larry has gone to in the recent months have been successes on economic development, either research or new jobs or whatever those kind of things are. But boy, that world has changed. When we started this 40 years ago with Mickelson, you'd loan a company money so that they could buy land and build a plant and have light assembly. And that kind of isn't there. You have the huge Swans thing, but then you have, you know, what do you do in the small communities? What do you do for small business? What do you do for Main Street? Small town South Dakota, we aren't recruiting jobs anymore because we have too many jobs, or we don't have enough people for the jobs.
Unemployment is low, yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you have that world changes all the time. So I hope our state continues to be flexible and move to different things. And, you know, certainly, cybersecurity and artificial intelligence and all the things of maybe of the future.
National security.
Yeah. National security. And I think it's a nice emphasis, I think, that for South Dakota. Of course, cybersecurity in Madison is, we talk about it all the time. So we're eager to protect the nation in that sense.
Do you think that we're going to be as excited about national security and bomb building as we are about cybersecurity?
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't be as excited. What the collective we?
Munitions. We're talking about munitions.
Right. Yes. Is that the three of us or all of South Dakota is going to be excited?
I mean, is South Dakota, that's a real rally around the flag effort, or it could be a really complicated.
Well, what was it like when we were building missile silos?
Exactly. That's what I'm asking.
I don't know what it was like. Mm-hmm. I'm not old enough.
That land with South Dakotans.
But
I just remember getting the talk about what to do if you saw the flash, and crawl underneath your desk, as we were still 70 miles away from the nearest missile silo in north central South Dakota. But it was a very real thing about national defense.
You know, in those films, there were no adults in the film. There's like a whole study on the fact that when they filmed those, there were no adults, and how an entire generation of children internalize this idea that when the bomb dropped, there would not be any adults in the room.
No kidding.
I heard it on NPR.
I'd love to hear the study.
How that impacted the baby boom generation, when they came of age. I find that fascinating.
I'm cleaning out my mom's house, and I just emptied the cabinet that kept all our bomb shelter supplies. Yep. So we had powdered milk and fresh water. I chose not to drink the water. It's been there for 60 years.
Yeah. Probably a good plan.
So
good decision making. Yeah.
Yes.
Underneath the basement stairs, there was enough food to feed us for several months, and jugs of water in glass bottles. And, you know, it was my mother who gave us the talk about what to do for radiation sickness and things of that nature.
Wow.
She was a school nurse.
But your question is valid, Lori. And what are we going to think about the future, whether it's drone munitions or, yeah. I mean, so
the future,
far, the,
yeah.
so far
data
the bomber
centers and drone munitions. These are the questions of the future. This is not the rolling hills and the you know, splendor of the pretentious splendor of well, West River.
You know, the expansion of Ellsworth in national defense.
This is a modern world that we live in. John Hunter is publisher emeritus of the Madison Daily Leader. He's a member of the South Dakota Newspaper Hall of Fame. Michael Card is professor emeritus of political science at the University of South Dakota in Vermilion. You can find all our Dakota Political Junkies analysis on our podcast. Find the SDPB Dakota Political Junkies podcast on your favorite podcast platform. SDPB is your source for live, on-demand, and digital coverage of the 101st legislative session. All coverage can be found online at sdpb.org/sdnetwork. And that's our show for today. We hope that it served you. SDPB's news director is Josh Chilson. Our director of journalism is Kara Hetland. Thanks to Jackie Hendry, CJ Keene, and Jackson Dirks for their assistance in producing today's show. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.